That's what climbing is doing something that you couldn't previously do, whether it was last week or seconds ago. And so there's immediate reward in climbing for, hey, there's a problem in front of you, and it's just a problem, and that's what life is. And we do something, change our body position, get another tool, and we move forward and we get past it.
Welcome to the Spartan Deca series on Spartan Up with Jared Cogswell, Director of Sport, and Yancey Culp, Director of Programming.
In episode 2, we're going to be talking about goal setting. When you have that goal that you just don't think you can do, but you want to do it bad enough, Hans is going to talk to you about how to do it.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/Spartan.
Hans, you know, we're obviously all influenced by those that we surround ourselves with. And, you know, I think in the climbing world, you know, we've all had mentors, and there's people that look up to you, even if you know that or not. You know, again, like I said earlier, it was all levels of climbers. But, you know, Alex brags about you, Tommy Caldwell, they brag about you. And who were your climbing mentors and those people that you looked up to as you started to elevate your game in climbing, so to speak?
Well, I think for sure Steve Schneider was the largest influence by a long shot, and his name is probably not well known of anybody under the age of 40, but he's ubiquitous with Yosemite climbing, and he is the classic dropped out of Chico State, straggly blonde haired, live in Yosemite and Yosar and get by on, you know, the scraps left in the cafeteria sort of guy. And he's, you know, a couple of years older than me, so about the same age, but he, you know, was one of the first three or four people to be a certified international course setter. So he not only was doing big walls in Yosemite, but he moved into that competition thing. And then he set the hardest sport routes in Tuolumne and set the hardest long free routes on El Cap initially. And was one of the few Americans to go and repeat a lot of these big long free routes in El Cap. And then he went and put free ascents up in Patagonia in weird terrain there. He had me follow him down there one season, and it was amazing to see his skill in the alpine environment. And not only like these skills he had in, you know, sport climbing, bouldering, big wall climbing, alpine climbing, and all this stuff, and free climbing in wild places, but he had the quintessential combination of competence and humor. And I think some of my best partners have that. Yuji Hirayama has the same, like, willing to laugh things off and be joke, but have competence and seriousness when it counts, right? Mm-hmm. And I, you know, humor is often more fun when you have people that you've experienced a serious, crazy situation with, because there's just like these unsaid things you can laugh about it, you know? So,
yeah.
Steve Schneider, yeah, and then everyone else is influential too. Yuji Hirayama, Alex Lowe, not Alex Honnold, Alex Lowe, he passed away in the late 90s. And, you know, he's known for the most famous quote I say all the time. I said it yesterday. Some guy was saying, well, I'm not one of the greatest climbers, and he was a heavy set guy that climbs on weekends, and I'm like, you know that the greatest climb in the world, you know who that is, right? And he's like, what? And I'm like, the one having the most fun.
Right.
Which is Alex Lowe's quote, right?
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. The people having the most fun, whether it's 5.4 or 5.2 or a scramble or 5.15, you know, hey, if you're having more fun than me and you're on 5.15, okay, you're a better climber than me. But and if you're doing a 5.0 or a scramble, hill hiking, and having more fun than me, then you're a better climber than me.
Yeah. So. Hans, you've climbed El Cap over 175 times, okay? And That's a lot of time on one mountain. I mean, what was the, like, and you could climb, if you can climb that, you can climb anything basically in the world, right? And I know you've had a lot of adventures globally, but what is the allure that, what is that thing that just kept bringing you back to that same mountain over and over?
So, just so people kind of get a reference that can view this, this rock face, El Cap, is 2,950 feet high at its tallest point, but it's over a mile wide also. So there's probably 40 distinct different routes on it that go up it, as, and 60 plus variations of routes to go up it. I've only done 25 different ones. I guess I'm just saying that to, I don't put things in place that, it's a lot of terrain, different terrain to climb. But if you see the picture, the trees are actually not as tall as they show there. I mean, there's 150 foot high trees, but the rock is just gigantic. And I, you know, I'll often put this when I do a show in Seattle, I'll put the Space Needle here and it goes only, you know, 1/4 the way up it. And if I went to Dubai, which has the tallest building in the world, it would only reach 2/3 the way up El Cap. It's only 2,500 feet. So, well, I guess more than 2/3, 3/4. And it's staggering to see how big it is. And that, not only the visual aspect of climbing it, but it is what I said earlier. It takes usually a long morning for me, or a long day for me to climb even the easiest route on it. The East Buttress is 11 pitches long. And generally speaking, I'll go and it'll take 6-7 hours to go climb it, you know, car to car. And that's a wonderful adventure. So it just provides this beautiful adventure to go and climb all day and exhaust yourself. You know, anybody who's done a Spartan race, the feeling afterwards of, you know, you feel like you've earned a rest, I guess. So,
well, you think 3,000 feet in 2 hours and I think we confirmed 23 minutes. I would got that wrong. I apologize. Go out there and get on a 60, go out and get on a treadmill, put it at 60% incline and climb 3,000 feet in 2 hours and change. And you would be surprised at how many people walking the planet could not do that. Yeah. And you did it going straight up, my friend.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not that smart. Yeah, I know.
Hey, Hans, real quick, what is your thought on the current state of climbing as a sport? Like around here in Austin, Texas, it's wildly popular. We just had a kid win nationals, of course, in the 15 meter. He went 7.1.
Wow.
The purest of all purest climbers. What if you're, you know, some of the locals will say, man, I don't like that it's the exact same route. It's 15 meters. But some's like, well, it allows us to disperse that across the world and let everybody train on the exact same thing. What is, if you could snap your fingers and have it set up exactly how you would want it for our youth getting into the sport of climbing where they can do it in the inner cities and whatnot, how would you set it up, my friend?
Are you talking about speed climbing specifically?
Yes, sir. Yes,
good.
Sir.
That's good that we narrow into something because it's a big subject, the whole Olympic thing. So a little background because I have a lot of history in this. I went head to head with the human Jackie Gottef, who was undefeated in speed climbing back in 1991, and I beat him by as less than I don't know a tenth of a second. And he went on to be the guy who designed the current speed route that we use, I think, since 2009. Good guy. And I understand the logic of making this comparable route everywhere. I think that reasonably and logically, when we think about what is the Olympics or what is competition, you're trying to display people's skill set. And the origins of climbing is you fail if you don't get to the summit in time. You know, Everest, if you wait too long, you know, there's that turnaround time, you fail. So your efficiency and effectiveness to make decisions and move through the mountains or steep terrain is important to success in climbing. So I think speed in climbing has its excellent origins and should be included in the Olympics. I think that all my time speed climbing, there was never the same route because we just didn't have it then. And we climbed on things that were very easy, 5.7 or 5.6, and you would run up them really fast. The current speed route is 5.10 plus. Maybe if you're shorter, it's 5.11. But we also speed climbed on 5.12s, very hard routes. And it played to different climbers' strengths. And there was perhaps something better for a shorter person or a longer person, a person who could move diagonally quickly or whatever. So I would, if it was my world, I would make the route different every time. Mm. Make it perhaps, you know, even the standard, I love that the standard wall perhaps is easy for everyone to set on, but I think that it would be awesome if it was vertical one time and then it was super overhanging another time, because then a different speed climber with different skills would perhaps win more so, you know? That'd be me. It was my, if I were in charge.
Man, I love that. Watching those X Game videos of you too, Hans. Just, man, you're just flying up the walls there. It was awesome.
There's a fun numbers questions. Perspective. Go ahead, but go ahead.
Well, a couple of questions. One, I want to hear a little bit more about your Do Hard Things challenges. Where can our audience find those? Because we've got a lot of people that listen to this that do a lot of hard things.
Right.
Do hard things.
We chose the goat actually as our mascot, which is interesting because I actually didn't know the initials GOAT meant whatever. greatest of all time. I didn't know that when we chose goat as our mascot. We like goats because they're not mice and rats, so they're not lowly, but they're not lions either. So they're not like royalty, but they just go out and do crazy stuff. Not crazy, even they'll hop up on top of cars that are parked because they can. And goats will go up around on wild cliffs, maybe to eat some grass, but sometimes they'll climb up on wild cliffs just to go up there. And so we liked goats because they're super agile, but they're not glamorous. And nobody needs to be glamorous. You just need to go out and do stuff. And that might explain a bit more about Do Hard Things Challenge or DHTChallenge.com. What I did 13 years ago as I started this list at the health club I was running, Diablo Rock Gym, and I just did a list of 100 challenges for the year, see if anyone could complete them. We started off with physical fitness things at first, like do 10 push-ups, run a mile in under 7 minutes, climb all the blue routes in the gym, whatever. Take a CrossFit class, take a yoga class, take a swimming class, whatever. Trying to get people to try different things at the gym. And I realized quickly, like, I want buy-in from people. So every year I just had the community tell me what challenges to add. And that was awesome because people thought of stuff that I didn't, like serve 3 hours in a soup kitchen. That is hard. And it's a different type hard. Write 4 handwritten letters to people and mail them. Like, that doesn't seem hard, but when is the last time somebody wrote a handwritten letter? And in cursive, for that matter. I found now I can't write in cursive for a lot of kids because they don't learn that in school anymore. But things like wave to 10 people you don't know. Hold the door open for 17 people you don't know. We have social, mental, physical challenges that the community comes up with, and we do because I'm competitive, you know, but it's fun to compare. We have people post when they do challenges, and there's a list, ongoing leader list, who's completed the most during the year. And typically nobody, except for 1 year in the 14 years I've done it, has anyone ever completed all the challenges. And we do a lot of things kind of that are reference to the year, like this year you do 2022 pull-ups, 2022 human-powered miles, which would be really easy for a runner or a cyclist, but harder for other people, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the DHTChallenge.com, and we encourage each other, and we try to meet up with people. It's been tough during COVID, but now that seems to be dissipating. And so me and my wife, Lisbeth, we have run groups of challenges at different gyms we'd go to, and people just got psyched and kind of joined in with us doing things. So
listeners again, and viewers, there is no cost to join or participate. DHTChallenge.com right now. Let's go. Let's get that in. Come on.
What does Hans get out of it? Actually, I get that sort of community pressure to keep doing stuff all year long. I swear I stay fit because I'm worried, like, oh, I'm too low on the list of challenges. So yeah, we don't make any money off of it. We just send out stickers and stuff to people and try to get them psyched. Yeah.
Well, it impacts that community. So that's good stuff.
We'll be right back to this interview, but first, a little bit from our sponsor, Exagen. Spartans, you know a broken bone can interrupt daily activities and even worse, keep you on the sidelines. Determining the best treatment option can be stressful. In just 20 minutes a day, Exagen helps jumpstart your natural bone healing process so you can get back to the race. Don't let a broken bone keep you on the sidelines. Talk to your doctor to see if Exagen is right for you. Exagen is indicated for the healing of non-union fractures and for accelerating the healing of certain acute fractures with no known contraindications. To learn more, visit exagen.com/Spartan. That's exogen.com/Spartan. Okay, back to the interview.
You know, Hans, a final couple of questions from me. Number one, you know, I think in a lot of ways, I've used climbing as a metaphor for life and learned some lessons myself, even without climbing, you know, the big walls that you have. What are some of the biggest lessons from that you could share with the audience that you've experienced from your time in the mountains?
Yeah, so first, I'm a professional speaker. I get up in front of audiences and motivate them. And it's usually some alpinist or somebody who's an adventurer, kayaker, and they went out and did this physically hard thing in the outdoors, and they brought a lesson from the outdoors to maybe business or to life, right? Mm-hmm. For people at these speeches. For me, I actually did a couple years as a yuppie, which is maybe an old term, right out of college. I went and wore the white collar, and I was in a manufacturing facility and pointed to jobs, do this, that. I was a manufacturing production operations manager, right? Which means do things efficiently. And I actually took lessons from business and took them to climbing as opposed to the reverse of most motivational speakers. They take them from climbing and bring them to life or to business. But certainly, you know, climbing has just reaffirmed for me that when I see people struggling at it and smiling, it's all about finding something you can't do, whether it's reach the next hold, and then you try again, you can't, you try again, and then you move your body a certain way and you can. And that's what climbing is doing something that you couldn't previously do, whether it was last week or seconds ago. And so there's immediate reward in climbing for, hey, there's a problem in front of you, and it's just a problem, and that's what life is. And we do something, change our body position, get another tool, and we move forward and we get past it, you know. That's probably the most simple and basic lesson of climbing is there's a barrier in front of you, and what's within you is stronger than what's in front of you. Mm-hmm. Stealing that from Eric Weimer, no barriers.
This is my last question, and then I definitely want the audience to know more about the book. But you've obviously have achieved some of the highest accomplishments in the world of climbing. How do you want to be remembered though? Like what's most important? What is that? What's that thing when we look back at Hans Florin, what would you appreciate for the people who know you, how would you want to be remembered?
I'll preface this. It's going to sound like gushy and not competitive Hans, but I go here to the crag at Red River Gorge and people are like, are you Hans Florin? And I'm like, yeah, I'm him. like, oh, will you get a picture with me? I'm like, yeah, I'd love to. Will you tag me? You know, like, really? I'm like, yeah, I want to catch up with Alex Honnell on my favorites or likes, you know? I'm climbing with my wife, a 5'6" or a 5'9", or I'm climbing with somebody they don't know, and I'm climbing a 5'10" or a 5'9", and I want to be known for that I'm accessible and I love climbing and the people in climbing more than beating somebody else at something, I guess.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten the opportunity to run into each other a couple of times now, and you've always been very gracious and very friendly and just approachable, and I appreciate that about you, Hans, because that says a lot about the human that you are, regardless of what you've done on that big wall in Yosemite. Tell us, if you can, just give us an opportunity to know where to purchase the book and maybe just a quick summary, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, the book, this is the bane of an author, is like you max your check-in luggage to go sell books and it weighs a lot, right? You could buy the book direct from me on my site, but like it's like I have the package and all that. Just buy it on Amazon. They're cheaper there. It's $25. It's a beautiful hardcover thing. But here is the sell thing. I was fortunate enough to read this for audio, and I know a lot of you out there have Audible credits. You just keep letting them build. Get the book on Audible. I read it. It's really nice. And I get probably 68.2 cents if you buy it on Audible. If you buy it direct off my site, the audio file, I get all $15 of it. So, whatever. But it won't slip into your Audible library so easy, or iTunes library. You'd have to manipulate the files and get them in there somehow. So there's the sales job. And the book is just really a recounting of my stories around climbing in it or failing to climb it my first time in 1988, and then climbing my first time the following year, and a myriad of characters I've been lucky enough to climb it with over the last 30 years. Yeah.
Okay. So I have one more question. How many nights do you think you've actually spent in camp four?
Oh, the preferred campground for climbers. Well, my longest stint was 10 days. I didn't exceed the 14-day limit. Like, it's kind of a badge of honor. I didn't get that one. And that was in 1986, probably. Yeah. But my total days in Camp 4 are probably less than, probably 50 or less.
Okay.
Because I was always an in and an out. I'll go in and climb a route, and then you're so exhausted. I get so exhausted. I'm like, I'm going to go rest somewhere else and do something else. Because I always did big days when I was there. So.
Well, you always hear about some of the characters that hung out at Camp 4, and I'm sure you know a lot of them.
Yeah.
Hans, yeah. You can probably understand why climbers transition very well when they come try a Spartan race. Lack of grip and pull strength, endurance, and body control is the reason for 99% of all obstacle failure in a Spartan race. So the climbers that come in and give it a shot always do really well. So on that note, if it ever works for your schedule, I would love to get out on course with you, and I am confident that you would absolutely conquer every damn obstacle out there with ease.
The electrocution one sounds pretty terrifying to me, but
that's on the Tough Mudder side of it. We don't electrocute you at Spartan.
All right, cool. Yeah,
yeah. Just have to run through fire.
But
well, Hans, thank you so much, man. It was a true pleasure having you on with us, and I wish you the best, and I'm looking forward to at least staying in touch with you, and anytime you're out in Colorado, if you're looking for somebody to belay, I'm your guy, man.
Excellent. And I would love to jump in on a DECA event or a Spartan race. Let's see if we can make that happen.
Let's do it. Thanks again, Hans.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up. Do you want to be ready for anything? Download Joe's free ebook at spartan.com/readyforanything. Do you know someone who needs a little help staying motivated, staying informed, getting or staying mentally and physically resilient? We're here 3 days every week with a mix of content to help you stay strong. From mindset to nutrition and everything in between. Listen every Tuesday to hear Joe DeSena, Spartan Race founder and CEO. And the rest of the week, join us for DECA, Endurance, and Classic episodes. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by the Exogen Ultrasound Bone Healing System. Exogen is a non-invasive treatment option that can help heal your broken bone. To learn more, visit exogen.com/spartan.